Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Thursday afternoon, November 7th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The election may be over, but the political tension in the workplace can remain. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the Federal Reserve will release its latest decision on interest rates in under an hour. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, thank you for joining us today. And typically in a rate hike or rate cut scenario, the size and scope of the Fed action is usually telegraphed ahead of time. The smart money seems to be coalescing on another quarter point cut. Has that been basically hinted at by people who are close to the Open Market Committee?
It looks like it. I certainly agree that the Fed is likely to cut a quarter point at this meeting today. That would bring their target down to 4.5% to 4.75% for the overnight federal funds rate. And the Fed feels, I think, they've made enough progress in bringing inflation down to justify that quarter point cut. The last inflation numbers we had on the CPI year over year were 2.4%. So they're making progress. They may be a little bit nervous over the core inflation rate, taking out the volatile food and energy prices. That's holding up around 2.7%. So my guess is that Fed Chairman Powell will be noncommittal about the December move, but they're ready to cut if they do see more progress toward reducing inflation to the 2% target.
Now, it sounds like, as Denise mentioned in the business report, that the real interest is going to be the news conference afterwards from Chairman Powell, especially his assessment of the election results and trying to make heads or tails out of the some of the Trump economic proposals that were made during the campaign about tariffs and so on and so forth. Can you really get that far out over your skis, though? Do you really want to make comments about things that may or may not happen?
You answered your own question perfectly. He's not going to commit to any of those political issues. I think he's going to try to stay as far away as possible. What I could make out is President-elect Trump says that he can serve out his term. That would be Powell's second four-year term as chairman. That would take him through next year, but he will not reappoint him. So you can't say Powell's on a short leash, but certainly Trump already has some indirect influence on him. But I don't think I do think Powell will have the room to either move or not move on rate cuts, depending on how close he's getting to that 2% inflation target.
And then once again, if you're the Fed, when you're assessing risks in cutting interest rates or keeping them where they are, what's the data telling him about the strength of the job market and where they are vis-a-vis inflation?
Well, the last job numbers were terrible, but remember we had hurricanes and strikes. You couldn't really make much sense out of the numbers we got. They were terrible. They were very weak in the latest month we've got job numbers for. But I think in general, the feeling is that the economy itself is a little bit stronger than most people thought at this point. And the job numbers, once we get a normal number, are still down, but they're holding up better than most people would think at this point. So I just think what Powell will do is go meeting by meeting, waiting until we basically get to the meeting before he decides, along with his policymakers, whether to cut again or not.
David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Thank you for joining us today.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
This was an especially divisive presidential campaign. The election may be over, but disagreements and hard feelings may remain. Let's discuss navigating the tricky waters with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And once again, an election is over. We all have to come together as Americans. That was the words from President Biden at the White House today. But when you're a manager and you have employees who have very deep feelings about the direction of the country, one way or the other, how do you, as a manager, bring people together?
Well, you have to start with what you have in common, because I think it was Confucius said, "If you hate something, you are defeated by it." And that includes your fellow employees. If you're mad at somebody else, then you're drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. That's not going to work. So you start with what you have in common as employees. You have a common goal in terms of the company and how you're trying to advance the company and its abilities. You probably have other things that you've gotten along on before the election that you did in the past agree on, and you have to try to find the common denominators. Anger is a very bizarre emotion in that while it is marginally negative, it's a very activating emotion, and it causes you to go to 160 beats per minute and make a lot. Nobody's ever really made a good decision out of anger.
Now, what?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was saying, what if you are a manager and you see an employee who's under, you know, one of your direct reports just going hog wild on social media, angry or deliriously happy since Tuesday, saying some things that are very edgy that could potentially get you or the company in trouble? What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, I think you've got to address it directly. And certainly if you're large enough to have a human resources function in your organization, you're seeking the advice of those who have the expertise for that. But, you know, sitting down with that person, not in a confrontational way, but identifying, hey, look, I know that you are arguably or understandably very happy about the way things went or very unhappy about the way things went. But your impressions, your feelings and your experiences have really nothing to do with us working as a company. And so you need to take that outside of work. There's no place for that. If you feel like the situation is one where you can have both parties in the room to discuss, I think then, but that requires a lot of skill, then you want to try to mediate to the point where you talk about what they have in common and what they can get along on, as opposed to identifying what they disagree with. If everybody's going to just list their grievances, you're never going to get anywhere.
Also, as far as social media policy is concerned, I know there is a lot of people who they have private Twitter/X accounts, and in their bio it says, you know, these opinions are my own. They do not reflect the opinions of Vandalay Industries, so don't get me fired as your latex salesman. But how much legal shielding does that give you? I mean, if a company has a social media policy, it should be enforced.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're an employee. It's an employee at will state, and most companies operate that way, even if they're not in an employee will state, meaning they can keep you or let you go at their own discretion. The chances are pretty good in your social media that you're working on the company computer or the company laptop, unless you're on your phone. If you're using your phone at work, then you're at work. And so I think that the rules for work override someone's freedom of speech in almost every respect in terms of you can say what you want, but you can't say it here.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a proposed property tax hike in Chicago, generating a lot of discussion. It's
lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Chicago City Council has begun debate on Mayor Johnson's proposed budget, which includes a $300 million property tax hike. We're joined by Quinn Myers, reporter for Block Club Chicago. Quinn, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. This $300 million property tax hike proposal, it sounds like it's going to require some major surgery before it can get the 26 votes in City Council.
That's correct. It is not sitting well with the vast majority of Alder people, including many allies of the mayor. Budget hearings began yesterday. And I would say more than two-thirds of Alder people are balking at raising property taxes. They're instead looking to see possible staff reductions or the cancellation or scaling back of an advanced pension payment that the mayor's budget proposal includes. But right now, there is not the political will to pass this current budget proposal at City Hall.
And Quinn, when it comes to the Alders thinking about this $300 million property tax hike proposal, raising taxes is always politically unpopular, but the fiscal reality occasionally makes it a necessity. How much did the local school board elections and the fates of various candidates, how did that inform the Alders' thinking? Did they believe this going into Election Day, or has the Election Day results given them puts this debate in a whole new light?
Well, certainly, I think it has, in some ways changed the debate, but I do think that they would have been opposed to this property tax before or after, or regardless of kind of the turmoil going on with the Chicago School Board. Certainly, CPS has their own budgetary woes, but they are kind of looking at their own, possibly taking out a short-term loan, a possible property tax from the CPS board. They're looking at their own budget fixes. The $300 million is really going to be a city council decision, and I do think one that, probably will have to be scaled back, or, they're going to have some other bargaining chips that are going to have to come in here. I don't see it moving forward in its current status at the moment, at least.
And then looking at some of the ideas that were on the table, as you mentioned, possible staff reductions, delaying payments in other areas, is there a solution that the Alders appear to be coalescing on, or is everyone just like, are they still in the process of throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks?
Certainly the latter. The mayor's office, mayor's administration says if they don't do this property tax increase, $300 million, they would have to reduce city staff, including police officers and firefighters, by about 17%. Basically, they're saying it's mass layoffs or this property tax increase. Some other people are saying, well, hold on, maybe we can look at some other ways to close this almost billion-dollar budget gap, including canceling this advanced pension payment. The city already pays billions of dollars to its four main pension funds every year. They're trying to get a bit of a jump on it, pay a little more than is required by law so they can, improve, hopefully, the city's bond rating, credit rating down the line. However, that's about $270 million this year, and that would pretty much cover this property tax increase. So that is one idea that a few older people are kicking around and saying, hey, maybe we should hold off because this is a really tough budget year. Maybe we should, kick the can on this advance payment that's not required down the road at least one more year.
Quinn Myers, reporter, Block Club Chicago, thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, more surgical procedures are being done using robots and AI.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Biden talks about the transition of power to President-elect Trump. Governor Pritzker talks about potential federal fallout under a new Trump administration. In Technology Thursday, we talk about the rise of AI-powered robotic surgery, and Wendy's turns to AI as a way to ensure the availability of its Frosty. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed. The Dow down 2 points, NASDAQ up 240, and the S&P 500 up 35. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, nice with plenty of sunshine, a high of 59. We have 54 degrees right now under mostly sunny skies. It's 12:31. And topping our news at the half hour, President Biden addressed the election results during the White House Rose Garden, address this morning.
Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him I direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition.
The president also says this year's vote lays to rest any questions about the integrity of the American electoral system. Governor Pritzker talking about the election results as well. He believes that even with the new Trump administration in place next year, Illinois residents will still have access to storm relief funds that were handed out during the Biden administration.
As we've had federal storm emergencies, other kinds of things that have affected the state of Illinois, and the federal government has programs to address those, and I expect that we'll be able to access those as needed.
The governor adds the state is prepared to ensure that health care, education, and reproductive rights are protected in Illinois during the upcoming Trump administration. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond. Find him online at HorizonInvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And looking at the market activity right now, it just seems that traders are watching and waiting for that Fed announcement about a half hour from now.
Yeah, I think they are, although I have to point out, I think, you know, this is not a bad day when you consider the huge day yesterday. So the follow-through that we've gotten today has been pretty good. And you like to see that after strong days, that you don't see profit-taking come in right away. So it is a little bit mixed. But, yeah, I think there's folks kind of waiting here for probably the next 20 minutes and see what the Fed's going to do.
Now, it was an interesting kind of a tale of two markets yesterday as the equities, you know, they just went rip-roaring based on the election news. And in your estimation, the big rally yesterday in equities, was that just simply investors betting on a more business-friendly environment in the Trump administration? Or was it also a little bit of relief from investors that we actually knew the outcome late on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I certainly was a relief rally in a sense that the uncertainty had been removed. I think there was also a rally driven in part by concerns or lack of concerns now in terms of significant tax raises, especially taxes on corporate profits. And I think those two things really kind of added to the fuel yesterday in the market.
And then in the bond market, though, yields went up. The 10-year yield went up. So it seems like not only are investors betting on a more business-friendly environment in the upcoming administration, but it seems like there was some trepidation about the impact of proposals involving tariffs and trade that could lead to a more inflationary environment, more so than we have today.
Well, that's true, and that certainly was reflected yesterday. Interest rate-sensitive areas of the market, such as bonds and utilities, real estate investment trusts, they didn't do so well. I think that is partly a function of concern that, the tax cuts will fuel inflation. And I think it's also a reflection of perhaps growth growing, where we have better growth in the market, and that may be driving interest rates a little bit higher as well.
And this is grounds for a much longer discussion, Chuck, but the economy that Donald Trump is inheriting in 2025, how does it differ from the economy he was inheriting in 2017 as far as interest rates are concerned, as far as wage pressures are concerned, and as far as employment is concerned?
Well, you know, he's coming into an economy here that actually is not too bad. You've had inflation that had obviously spiked a lot higher, but that has been coming back. You've got kind of this back and forth on the interest rate environment, but corporate profits are still pretty favorable. So I think from the standpoint of what he's inheriting, it's certainly not a bad hand, and we'll see if that's something that can be built on here. But you know, probably the biggest difference is on the interest rate front. And when we endured, I shouldn't say endured, but for savers, it was an endurance of a lot of the period when interest rates were at zero. That's not the case today. So it'll be interesting to see how this economy and the Trump administration maneuver in a period where rates, at least on a very short-term basis, have been rising. And we're showing some of the highest rates here in several months.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services in Hammond, Indiana. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, artificial intelligence and robots make their move into the operating room.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. In this segment, we're examining the growth of AI and robots in the area of surgery. We're joined by Matt Wren, tech expert and founder VRAR in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. When we talk about the use of robots in the operating room, this is not necessarily a revolutionary new technology. And how much of the surgery process is already automated?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me back. I'll say, I don't think there's that much of it that's automated at this point. And I think, honestly, saying that it's automated, that's kind of the scary part. What robots are being used for now are things that are, you know, procedures that, frankly, can be automated. I probably shouldn't have watching my own words there. But procedures that are effectively very repetitive. So things like LASIK. LASIK surgery is it's almost all automated at this point. But there is still somebody, there's still a surgeon who's overseeing it, who's directing it. And, you know, what the relatively new advancements are is that generative or large language model and transformer model AI is being used to sort of expand the capabilities of the robots.
And then when we introduce the large language model into the surgical suite, how will the AI make the surgery robot better? How will it improve the experience for the patient?
As I said, probably shouldn't say large language model. I should say more the transformer model. So transformers are that's kind of what's making large language models and things like ChatGPT so capable right now. And so it's more of a learning model for artificial intelligence. Instead of us sort of programming it and procedurally telling it what to do, it's learning itself what to do. So it's being able to interpret the input that we're giving it and actually learn. And that's the same thing that's being applied in a surgical suite. So a transformer model, whereas, you know, again, like ChatGPT, it's learning based on a large language, a huge language library. What it's doing in a surgical suite is it's able to interpret a lot of input of like prior surgeries and the ability to, you know, see the health data, see how things have been done and learn itself sort of the better ways to proceed to actually be able to complete, again, just small parts of a surgery, things like suturing or things like doing essentially repetitive tasks as directed by a surgeon.
And as a productivity tool and as this technology evolves, could it be used to perform elective procedures like you talk about LASIK, low stakes kind of surgeries as opposed to open heart surgery or exploratory brain surgery or something like that?
I mean, I don't see any time in the near term where it's doing it itself. I think it's always going to be doing sort of small portions and small tasks that are being directed. And again, at things that are relatively easy and repetitive and things that it can learn, because that's what AI is good at. You know, you and I had talked previously about AI for like replacing coding. It's not going to replace a developer because the developer still has to direct at a high level all of the things that need to be done. But a developer might be able to say, hey, write me this function that would only take me normally 5 minutes to write, but you can output it in 30 seconds. Same thing with a surgeon. They might be saying, okay, I'm going to direct, you know, the making this incision or possibly making this, you know, suturing up this one little area or holding this one piece of tissue. So the surgeon will be directing the robot to do very small portions of the task. That's the way I see it being used.
And this is just simply theoretical. I mean, this is something that people are talking about at symposia. Is it close to being tested anywhere?
I mean, my understanding is that it is being used. It's being used, again, for very low-level things. And as time evolves, it will learn better and it will ultimately start being used for more and more portions of a surgery, potentially, but again, still as directed. The thing that is, you know, ultimately when it comes to anything healthcare related, the importance here is the safety of the patient and frankly, the good healthcare outcome. And if a robotic assisted surgeon can be more efficient than a non-robotic assisted surgeon, then ultimately that's just better for the patients and it's better for healthcare in general.
Matt Wren, tech expert and founder, VRAR Chicago. Thank you for joining us on Technology Thursday. And join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a fast food chain using AI to keep those milkshakes flowing. It's
cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Wendy's is turning to artificial intelligence to make sure its restaurants never run out of one of its signature items. Let's learn more from Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And the through line in the history of quick service restaurants is using technology to get food to the customer faster. And today we have AI that is helping Wendy's determine where the supply chain kinks exist with Frosties.
That's exactly right. In fact, it's not just getting the food to the customer faster. It's making sure that the inventory you keep so you're ready to get that food delivered faster is not too big. In other words, the smaller your inventory, the lower your costs. And so, to do that perfectly or close to perfectly, especially when they had this promotion recently and occasionally, which is a $1 Frosty. Of course, demand went way up, and there was no limit on the number of Frosties that could be ordered. They literally did that to try to break the system using Palantir, which is a very big AI concern. And basically, Palantir's AI machine or model spots supply chain shortages way faster than average human beings. There are literally hundreds, in some cases thousands, of inputs and variables when it comes to, you know, supply chain and managing it. Palantir keeps an eye on that for Wendy's so that Wendy's doesn't have to have huge amounts of inventory to supply the demand.
Now, is this taking place on the restaurant level or is this taking place on the supplier level?
That's a great question. The supplier level is the answer to that question. Now, a lot of people are getting into this. I mean, you know, full disclosure, my brother's involved in supply chain. I hear about it all the time, even when I don't want to. And there's some companies I've worked with before. One's called John Galt. They've just injected AI into their supply chain management model.
Now, aren't they the Omaha Steaks people?
John Galt? No.
Yes, no.
but all that said, they are involved. Let me tell you this. They are involved with delivering that stuff. And by the way, as you can imagine, when you have perishable items like steak, like ice cream, like any kind of dairy product, that just-in-time management, which has always been a priority, is really hard to do if the temperature suddenly changes. You know, you got global climate change, you got all kinds of challenges, and all of a sudden your ice cream's melting. AI can actually help you manage those myriad variables.
Now, when we're talking about this Palantir technology, it's a platform. And I was a little bit disappointed, though, that this is not like a proprietary Wendy's product. Like they didn't develop an AI model and called it Dave and have that in honor of Dave Thomas, you know, the founder of Wendy's,
yes.
and have that manage its AI. It was using somebody else's platform. But as you mentioned, I mean, just-in-time delivery is the name of the game when it comes to managing the supply chain. And it seems like in food service, it's a very early proof and concept model.
That's absolutely right. They're trying it. Like I said, they were trying to, and the good news is they tried to break it and it didn't break. And that was in a large part because of that supply chain management, the AI component of all that. But just in time with like we talked about with perishable items, yeah, you could leave that Cisco truck sort of idling outside for a while if you want to do that. The problem with doing that, the problem with having sort of that supply chain on call and waiting, is that it's extremely expensive. So all those margins disappear when your supply chain is not well managed. And this AI platform, Palantir's, John Galt's, a whole bunch of people, has really streamlined this, and we'll see where it goes.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor of the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today.